The junk drawer. We moved into our current house 3 years ago, and I exulted in our abundant storage space and expansive countertops, particularly the kitchen, which featured a large island. In our previous house, I had railed against the piles of clutter that clogged every available flat surface. I had thought a possible solution was sloping counters such that everything would roll off, forcing household members to put away or otherwise dispose of clutter. Despite all sorts of empty drawers waiting to be filled with a disorderly assemblage, the dictionary definition of clutter, the countertops in our new home simply exacerbated the problem by attracting even larger volumes of clutter that could loiter around for days. Both Nick and I have home offices, and though I am mostly a solo act, Nick does have clients that stop by from time to time. To get to his office above the garage, they have to walk through the kitchen and mudroom, which my mother always referred to as clutter-prone tension zones. So Nick might call out, "Client arriving in an hour!" And together we would get into our counterattack positions and try to render all flat surfaces visible once again. This generally involves indiscriminately sweeping all of the gradue of the previous week into an empty drawer. This reminded me of the Tings Accumulate drawer in my parents' household, coined by a wonderful Belgian cleaning lady who used to bring me ceramic figurines and make diminutive cheese sandwiches with the crust cut off. She knew that the cleaning lady was the obvious scapegoat for anything that went missing, so she simply put every ting into one Accumulate drawer in the kitchen. I wallow in jealous awe when I enter a house with immaculate countertops and no clutter in sight. I don't consider myself a slob, but it seems to take almost heroic daily efforts to achieve the immaculate countertop. I feel certain that all these other households must have cavernous accumulate drawers someplace. Occasionally, when I'm in a new household, I like to take a discreet peek into the fridge to get a quick insight into the guts of the family. For example, you could discover that the family was a Miracle Whip family instead of a real mayo family, or that they had some sort of odd food fetish, such as scads of different jars of olives, or that even the tiniest scrap of food was saved in color-coded Tupperware containers. I think that a peek into the accumulate drawer might be just as enlightening. Growing up, there was a fake throw-up and whoopee cushion in our drawer for years, which gives you some insight on the general tenor of humor in our household. Once things drifted into the drawer, they seemed to acquire a life of their own and were never thrown out. For example, a dented ping-pong ball simply cannot be resuscitated, and by any reckoning has outlived its usefulness. Basic household etiquette would demand that you pick up the ball, rotate about 180 degrees, and deposit it in the garbage can behind you, but in our household, this would never have happened. Perhaps we secretly wanted to retaliate by inflicting the same heady rush of joy at finding the ball, followed by swift disappointment at spotting the flaw and canceling the ping-pong game. If directly asked why the ball wasn't thrown away, we could simply say, "Oh, I thought someone was saving it for something, like an art project." But basically, I think that throwing anything out would violate the unspoken sanctuary of the accumulate drawer. Other items in the drawer might have included a deck of 47 cards, a pair of scissors, which would be a real find, except they were left-handed scissors that only my mother could use, one shoelace with no mate, a lock padlock, but with no combination in sight, a variety of batteries, many of which could be dead, but who knew? Birthday candles, but some would be broken. A mechanical pencil with no lead. There were other things that rightfully should have been there, but weren't. The accumulate drawer was the only place you could have any hope of finding the pin to inflate the basketball on a Sunday when all the stores were closed, but typically when you needed something, it wouldn't be there. The same thing went for scotch tape, band-aids, and non-dried-up markers. Extension cords should also have been in the drawer, but if you struck out there, you could always pirate one from one of the lamps in the living room, with the resultant downstream cursing and gnashing of teeth as night fell. Scissors were always elusive, and it was with a heavy heart that you had to resort to using the left-handed scissors. The one thing I will say about those scissors is that it provided one of my first insights into the agony of discrimination. The car served as a movable accumulate zone. Once I came to an abrupt stop and three different kinds of balls rolled into the front seat from God knows where, one dangerously wedging itself under the accelerator. One of the balls was a golf ball, which was particularly perplexing since nobody in our family played golf. My first car in the 1970s was a green Volvo, and it didn't get cleaned out until 1979 when I won a bet and my brother Tony was assigned the job of auto archaeologist. I kept his inventory of artifacts, which included an unmailed thank you note to Uncle Faye and Aunt Ludi, a newspaper clipping about the death of a white rhino in a zoo, one Frito, good condition, an unpaid parking ticket, a Cook County dog rabies tag from 1978, odd since I never had a dog and certainly not in Cook County, a pin to inflate a basketball. I have always considered the car a private place and thus have minimal compulsion to clean it out, particularly given the spirit of accumulate sanctuary. However, occasionally someone will ask for a ride. Recently, I drove to a business meeting where I was meeting some out-of-town clients. Unexpectedly, my car was commandeered for transportation to the restaurant for dinner. As everyone piled in, I realized that the back of the car was littered with fertilizer left over from a weekend project. Everyone was a good sport, but I did wonder if fertilizer detracted from their business perception of me as a top-flight consultant. Sadly, several years ago, the Ting's accumulate drawer disappeared from my parents' house. At its peak, the house was rollicking with six children and various house guests, and the accumulate drawer was thriving. But some 40 years later, the household has winnowed down to just my father and his caretakers, and in some sort of fit of reorganization, the contents of the drawer were finally thrown away. So after 50 years of loyal service, the whoopee cushion, fake puke, and dented ping-pong balls met their final demise. Recently, I inspected the accumulate situation in our new house, which is now spread over several drawers. I was gratified to see that I have the same array of items, but perhaps in an effort to redress some of the frustrations of my childhood, my drawers seem to be better stocked. There are several identical decks of cards, such that there is a very good chance that one complete deck can always be cobbled together. There appears to be a lifetime supply of dice. I found a ping-pong ball that treads the fine line between blemished and dented, but a few test bounces on the counter suggest that it is very usable. There are several extension cords and an intact set of birthday candles and lots of rolls of scotch tape. But there is also a sheet of paper listing numbers that look like a combination to a bicycle lock, but no lock. A rubber chicken that, when squeezed, exudes some sort of egg from its butt in a gelatinous capsule. A novelty plastic kitchen item, intact, that appears to make curly-cue French fries, but since the directions are in Italian, it has never been used, but certainly won't be thrown away. A wedge-shaped token that looks like it comes from a Trivial Pursuit game. An indescribable, squishy plastic thing that might be related to a computer, so I wouldn't dare throw it away. Huzzah! The spirit of accumulate lives on.